Please be seated. Well, we have a full house on this beautiful April morning for our last day of oral arguments this term. This morning, my notes tell me that we have some students who are visiting us with a program called Court with Class that we operate in conjunction with the State Bar of Wisconsin. So they've had an opportunity to have the briefs and learn a little bit about the case that we're going to hear. They are students from Lincoln High School. So if they are here and their advisors are here, will you please stand? Oh, wonderful. Well, you may be seated. Thank you. We like to have students come and visit the courts. We hope that you find it interesting and learn more about how the court system operates in the state of Wisconsin, at least at the Supreme Court level. Today, one of our justices will be coming out to speak with you. If you can come back after the second argument this morning, and that's Justice Annette Ziegler. She won't discuss the case with you, but she has a lot of other things that she can tell you that I think you'll find interesting. And everyone is welcome. So if there are others here, aside from the students, you're certainly welcome to join Justice Ziegler's discussion after the second case. I'd like to introduce the rest of the court to you as well. And to Justice Ziegler's right is Justice Rebecca Bradley. Then, of course, Justice Ziegler. Next to me is Justice Shirley Abrahamson. I am Pat Rogensack, the Chief Justice. On my left, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. Next to her, Justice Michael Gableman. And at the far end of the bench, Justice Daniel Kelly. So with those brief announcements in place, we will proceed to our first case, State versus Floyd. Counsel, are you ready to proceed? Please do. Excuse me just a minute. Your mic is not working or something here. Try again.
Chief Justice Rogensack, and may it please the court. The intrusive frisk of Mr. Floyd in this case was unconstitutional for two reasons. First, it occurred in the absence of a objectively reasonable suspicion that Mr. Floyd was involved in criminal activity, much less that he was armed and dangerous.
Could you make sure to speak up? I think we might be having some difficulties.
I'm sorry. It's always off-putting when people interrupt your argument and you're all set to go. But this room is like talking in a marble box, and it's sometimes hard for us to hear, even though you're not that far away.
I'll make sure to speak up.
Okay. Thank you.
Where I was, there's the intrusive frisk in this case was unconstitutional for two reasons. First, it occurred in the absence of an objectively reasonable suspicion that Mr. Floyd was involved in criminal activity, much less that he was armed and dangerous. And in addition, it occurred after the stop should have ended, and the request was made in a manner that conveyed compliance was required. Because, again, it was after the stop should have ended while the deputy was still withholding Mr. Floyd's identification and citations.
Can you talk to me a little bit about Malone and whether or not we need to overturn that case to reach the result you would like us to reach today?
I don't think it's necessary for this court to overrule Malone. Malone involved a question. It's relevant to this case in the context of reasonable suspicion. And in Malone, there were several factors, more than what occurred here. Like every Fourth Amendment case, it's very context-specific. But in Malone, there was more going on. The occupants of the vehicle were doing things that enhanced the presence of the air fresheners, things that are absent in this case. For example, the officer in Malone, and there was a driver and multiple occupants of the vehicle, they were giving inconsistent stories about their travel plans. I believe in that case, they were touching their pockets when the officer directed them not to. they were exhibiting signs of nervousness. Those things are absent in this case. Mr. Floyd was, the deputy testified that Mr. Floyd didn't do anything furtive. There was nothing about he was giving inconsistent stories about where he was going or anything like that. There was no signs that he was nervous. All those things are absent in this case.
It's been referenced that this case is somewhat of a close call. Do you see it as a close call, or do you see it as it has to be your way?
I think when this case, and again, every case is context, you know, is specific to the circumstances, but this case is not a close call in the sense that it falls far below in terms of reasonable suspicion than other cases from this state or other jurisdictions.
So what should the officer have done? I mean, pulling the person over is fine, right?
Correct.
Okay, because there was a reason to do that and citations could issue, right?
Correct.
So you're not really disputing that. So what would have been proper here? Where did the officer cross the line in your viewpoint?
Well, I think the proper way to consider this is step by step. And again, from the beginning, it was proper for the officer to pull over Mr. Floyd. He approached Mr. Floyd's car. He obtained his identification. He learned that Mr. Floyd did not have a license. After this interaction, which the deputy said was 2 or 3 minutes, he returned to his squad car. He called for a canine unit. He prepared the citations. I believe there was three.
Is all that still okay?
All of this is still okay.
When did it stop being okay? I'm trying to figure out
sure.
where your bright
well,
line is here
sure.
for us to know. This
well,
is where the officer.
If I can interrupt for a moment, he was stopped for a registration and license. Once he was stopped, the car wasn't appropriately registered, and he could tell that from the license plate, right?
Correct.
That's why he was stopped. There's no question that that stop was a valid traffic stop.
No.
Right? Okay. Then when he asked for the license, there was no license. So now we got two violations, nothing to do with drugs, right?
Correct.
Okay. So he stopped, and he's going to be ticketed or warning, whatever the officers decides to do. Okay. So what are the grounds? This is another way of asking.
I'd actually, if you don't mind, I'd like him to answer the rest
no,
of my question,
didn't.
Then he can get
good.
To and backtracking
I'm
with
just
you
trying
on
to,
what's troublesome.
To get
sure.
to where he can do that.
Right. That's. I think you were walking us through that. He's back
sure.
in the car. He's
sure.
running some he's, things. He's getting the citations prepared.
Right.
He calls for a canine unit. All that is fine so far. Is that your viewpoint or no?
Correct.
Why
when
does he call for a canine unit?
The scope of the mission here was to resolve the traffic violations. There was no reasonable suspicion that, again, that arose during this time to permit prolonging the stop. So when those citations are prepared, he has Mr. Floyd's identification, he goes back to the car, the stop should have ended at that point. But something else happened, which is the deputy directed
okay, that's the bright line, right? Everything's fine. As he's walking back, he has the citations, he's going to hand them to the defendant. And your view is he should have said, have a good day, you're on your way.
Well, under Rodriguez, the mission was complete. The purpose of the mission was to resolve the traffic violations, and that was done. But
counsel, I don't understand how that can be an improper prolonging of the stop if the officer learned during the investigation that the driver, your client's driver's license was suspended, and the officer, it seems to me, provided a perfectly logical explanation saying, look, I wasn't going to allow the driver to drive away from the scene because he was unlicensed to drive a motor vehicle. So how is it that you are pinpointing that as the time of the red line, as was just mentioned?
I understand Your Honor's question, and the reason is the deputy himself testified at the suppression hearing that he could have explained the he could have given the tickets and identification to Mr. Floyd while he was seated in the car. So it wasn't necessary for Mr. Floyd to exit the car at that point.
Well, it was going to be necessary for him to exit the car at some point, correct?
Correct.
Why is it that it is inappropriate extension of the stop to require him to get out of the car before explaining the tickets rather than after?
Because the mission was complete at that point, and he could it was not necessary for him to exit the car. By asking him to get out of the car, it prolonged the stop beyond the point, beyond the point upon which the mission could have been completed.
Wouldn't it be part of the officer's mission to ensure that he did not drive away after he handed him the citation? Wouldn't it be part of the officer's responsibility to ensure that he did get out of the car so that he wouldn't drive away?
I think that, the deputy testified that Mr. Floyd could have given a ride, he could have walked away. It was not a necessary part of the mission how Mr. Floyd chose to leave the scene. It was not...
Other than driving away.
Correct.
Because he couldn't do that.
Correct. But instead of what the deputy testified he could have done, which was explain the citations, return the identification because the mission of the stop to resolve those traffic violations was over, instead he had Mr. Floyd exit the car, and while withholding those citations and identification, he asked about his weapons, his safety, and then he made a request, not just for information, but a request to do an intrusive frisk. None of that was necessary to end the stop, and by choosing to do so, it necessarily prolonged the stop beyond the point that it should have ended.
Would we have to disagree with the United States Supreme Court in its opinion in Pennsylvania versus Mims if we were to agree with your position that the officer cannot ask an occupant of a car to get out during a traffic stop?
No, you don't. It could be a different case if, in Mims, the driver was asked to get out of the car before the mission was over. Then Mims was a traffic violation. That was the reason for the stop. And the driver was asked to get out of the car before that mission was resolved. That's different here, where we have a deputy who said the stop was not going to be over until he searched Mr. Floyd. And he said that, he had a hunch about criminal activity, and that's what he called the canine unit.
And let's say that's all true. Do we care about what the officer said about what his intent was?
Well, we would agree that the test here is an objective test, but this court has said before that the subjective views of the officer can be considered as part of the reasonable suspicion analysis. And it's not just what he said at the hearing. He asked for a canine unit. He told the other officer who arrived that that's why he wanted Mr. Floyd out of the car, because he had suspicions about drug activity or criminal activity. So to get back to your point about Mims, it's not inconsistent with Mims, because in Mims, the request to get out of the car was done before the mission was over. Here, the deputy expressly withheld the identification and the citations and chose to have Mr. Floyd get out of the car, which is necessarily beyond the point upon which the traffic stop should have ended.
Well, as a practical matter, the traffic stop doesn't end until he explains the citations, correct?
Correct.
All right. So when he walked back to the car, the mission of the stop was not over yet.
Well, let me just clarify my position, which is that, I think Rodriguez makes clear that the officer does not decide when the stop is over. The stop is over when the mission is complete or should have been complete. So under these facts, the traffic stop should have been complete when he returned to Mr. Floyd and had his identification and citations ready to return to him.
Okay, but is explaining the citation part of the mission of the stop?
I would agree that that is what, okay. The officer needs to explain the reasons why he's issuing the citations.
All right, so as a functional matter, The stop's not over until he explains the citations.
Correct. And
you're saying there's a more expeditious way for him to wrap up the mission of the stop than what he actually did.
Correct, and that's consistent with Rodriguez.
And are you saying that that is a matter, that the expedition with which he resolves the stop is a matter of constitutional concern?
Yes, I think that Rodriguez and the cases it relies on, going back to Terry, and this U.S. Supreme Court has held that a traffic stop is like a Terry stop, and it should be a brief detention. That scope is defined by the mission of the stop.
Right. So when in this case, just so I understand your position thoroughly, your position is that it's a matter of constitutional magnitude that the officer asked him to step out of the car before he explained the citation to him, rather than explaining the citation to him while he was sitting in the car.
Correct, because it extends the stop beyond the point it should have ended. And it's, in addition to that, there were, it's not just asking him to get out of the car. He asked him to get out of the car. He asked about weapons. And then he, even though Mr. Floyd said no, the officer made a request to do not just, you know, for more information, but to do this intrusive frisk.
Counsel, isn't there something that happened that allowed for a change here? And as the Court of Appeals said, the Circuit Court concluded that if there was an extension, the extension was warranted because the deputy reasonably suspected criminal drug-related activity. So at that moment, everything changed. He now has, or thinks he has, reasonable suspicion to do what is needed under a Terry stop, not for the registration of the automobile or the lack of a driver's license, because he thinks he is now faced with drugs. That's why he calls the canine dog.
Correct.
Okay.
And that was specifically the Circuit Court's finding.
Okay, that's right. Now you are faced with what are the articulable objective facts that show that there's reasonable suspicion for a drug stop of him. We're done. You can argue we're done with the registration. We're done with the driver's license. We got a new case now. Right?
Correct.
And that's what you're faced with.
Right. And
so what are the articulable objective facts that enable this officer to go on with a drug stop? This is a Terry stop. Right?
Well,
okay. Let's label them. What are they?
The deputy pulled him over in a high crime area.
Okay. Does the deputy's testimony explain what the high crime area is?
Well, to put it in context, he's first asked by the prosecutor at the hearing what to describe the area. And he says it's a block away from a main intersection next to S.C. Johnson Wax.
Okay, our S.C. Johnson advertises as a family corporation, which the officer says is in a high crime area.
Yes. Now, the prosecutor followed up and said, is there large quantities of drug and gang activity? And he says yes to that question.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he doesn't, and I make this point in my brief, and the state accuses, you know, we're not saying that an officer has to be very specific about a high crime area, but all these factors depend on their weight, the weight that we should give to them. And when, in the manner in which this area was described, was general, wasn't specific about how recent this activity was going on.
Or what crime? Did you say it was drug crimes in this area?
I believe that was the testimony at the suppression hearing, that there was drug and gang activity, large quantities of drug and gang activity.
And what time was this stop?
This stop was during daylight hours, 6:45 p.m. in the summertime.
Okay. So
Is Johnson people working there? Is this a time where there are a large number of employees who may be engaged in gangs and drugs?
I don't know that the record is...
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
Sure,
what the record
I understand.
Was. Okay. Okay, so high crime area. What else?
There were two aspects of Mr. Floyd's car, which was the presence of air fresheners on every vent.
How many?
The record is unclear. Though as specific as it is presented in the at the motion to suppress was that there was a air freshener on every vent and over the rear view mirror.
How many vents are there in this? What kind of car are we dealing with?
I believe it was a Volvo, and I don't know how many vents this particular car had.
All right, so this is all very general. Okay.
Correct. And
have you seen the TV ads that recommend that they spray the cars be sprayed and the sofas be sprayed with an air freshener so that you kill all the sneaker odors and...
I'm not aware of that commercial, but I would, it reminds me of...
You don't know if it's an S.C. Johnson commercial.
No, my understanding is S.C. Johnson does manufacture air fresheners, but...
Okay. And that's a legal product.
Is probably, that in the record?
Better I don't think that is in the record.
Okay, but, so we don't know how many air fresheners there
no,
are.
No, and there's nothing in the record. I just reminds me of a point that the deputy never engaged with Mr. Floyd in a conversation. Why do you have so many air fresheners? Where are you going? None of that is in the record.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to. There's nothing.
He doesn't have to, but...
Okay, but you got air fresheners. What else makes this guy very suspicious?
The last factor relied on the Court of Appeals and the state in this court is that the car had tinted windows.
Tinted windows. Are these tinted windows ordinary in Volvo? Are these... Was this tint added by somebody afterwards?
That's not...
Does the record show?
The record does not show that. The record does not show that the windows of this car were in violation of the traffic code in regard to an illegal level of tint. Or that the deputy said, I couldn't see, I had a difficulty seeing in the car because of the tinted windows. It was just a factor mentioned towards the end of the suppression hearing.
But that's why a lot of people have difficulty looking into a car, every car that's on the road, because many of them have tinted windows.
I think it's not...
Can we take judicial notice of that?
...contestable that it is a common feature of automobiles
today. Is or isn't?
I'm sorry?
It is a common feature. Okay. What else?
Those were the three factors.
Yeah, but he said he was from Kenosha. What has that got to do with it?
The Court of Appeal, that is what was, you know, the other factors mentioned at the hearing were...
This was in Racine County, which is adjacent
correct,
to Kenosha.
And that Mr. Floyd was from Kenosha, that he was traveling alone.
Is that an indication of drug dealing?
I am not aware of how that's connected, and the Court of Appeals did not consider that when...
Is this a stereotype of people from Kenosha?
I don't know that that is part of the... I'm not sure how that factor weighed into the officers or the circuit court's conclusions about reasonable suspicion here.
Well, the concurrence thought it was that there was another issue going on here, and we have an amicus brief from the public defender's office, and they think that the stereotype here is the race of the driver.
Correct. That is something that the concurrence noted, and I think that it's a reflection of the world that we live in, I think the amicus brief takes up those points to bring them to the court's attention.
What struck me about the amicus brief, and it's not that. These elements, other than Kenosha, which is undefined here, high crime area, air fresheners, and tinted windows, you will find in numerous cases, in combination with each other or otherwise, and the court will say those are reasonable suspicion. Right? And that's why you've been asked, do you have to overrule this case, do you have to overrule that case, because one or more of these factors are in the cases. And as you have said, it's the totality of the circumstances, right?
Correct.
And your argument is that the totality here doesn't add up.
It doesn't add up, and I think what's absent from this case, unlike the many that I've looked at, is that the officer is observing something about the driver or occupant. He's doing something in the high crime area. He's acting nervous. All those things are absent here. But they could, those things that were present in Malone that are absent here, those would heighten these other factors to the point of perhaps meeting a reasonable
solution. Counsel, your what bothers
time is
me.
Just about up.
Okay. I have one more question. This is what bothers me. The issue here is a Terry stop. And one of the problems is the Terry case is a case of long standing, and it has been encrusted with a lot of cases thereafter. And in the Terry stop, you had the police watching two guys in the middle of the night casing a jewelry store. And they thought that was reasonable suspicion that they were going to burglarize this store. And we have moved so far from that. And in a case where the officer says high crime area and then doesn't really give any facts or figures, then we don't know how many auto air fresheners and what the usual circumstances are across the state. And we don't know enough about tinted windows. That is so far from the Terry stop. And don't we need more in this record than just these code words?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the officer here didn't have to do so, but he could have engaged Mr. Floyd more, as officers do in many of these cases, to develop, is this just a hunch that I have, or what's going on here? Why do you have so many air fresheners? Where are you going, et cetera? But none of that happened here, and I think it illustrates that the deputy in this case had a hunch, and he was ready to go and act on it.
And hunches aren't good enough under...
They're not good enough, and I think... And to bring it to Rodriguez in terms of prolonging the stop, the majority in Rodriguez held that, you know, an officer who's diligent, working quickly through the stop, doesn't get bonus time to do what he did here, which was the stop was over, but he did something else, which is he had Mr. Floyd get out of the car, he asked Mr. Floyd about weapons, and then he did something which was to request this intrusive frisk, which
Counsel,
the deputy...
tell me a little bit about the frisk. Was this was this expressed to him as a request to search him for weapons?
The deputy asked him, is there anything on you that could hurt me? And Mr. Floyd told him no, but despite, at this point, there was nothing to arouse the deputy's suspicion at that point, and he told the deputy no. The deputy just ignored that and then made this other request, which was to do this intrusive frisk.
Did he say, can I do an intrusive frisk? Or did he say something?
He asked,
what did he say?
He did say, can I pat you down?
Okay.
But I think that...
Pat you down for weapons, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
But
the type of pat down that was actually performed here, did that go beyond a pat down for weapons?
Well, I think that it's quite clear in this case that the pat down was quite intrusive. He touched Mr. Floyd all over outside his clothing and just, may I finish?
Yes, you may. And I have a request for rebuttal because you've not had a chance to address consent, which is what I wanted to present to you. So when you come back on rebuttal,
sure,
please do that, but please answer Justice
sure,
Kelly's question.
Sure. In terms of the frisk that was done here, it was outside the clothing. But where the contraband was located was very located inside, you know, Mr. Floyd's groin area. So it was what ended up unfolding was a very intrusive frisk.
Thank you very much.
Berg for the state of Wisconsin. May it please the court. I'll admit I'm a little bit surprised by opposing counsel's argument here. The primary issue that this court needs to decide, the first issue that this court needs to decide, is was there an extension in this case? You don't even get to the reasonable suspicion analysis until you decide whether there was an extension. He concedes that there was a lawful traffic stop. Until his argument now, I had never understood his argument to be that asking Floyd to step out of the vehicle was an extension. That can't be right because that's directly refuted by MIMS. MIMS sets forth a per se rule that police can always ask a driver to step out of the vehicle. This court has recognized that rule as well. So the only possible theory of extension that Floyd has is that the officer extended the stop by asking about weapons and asking for consent to conduct a pat-down. Now, there's two reasons why those two questions are not an extension. The first reason is that this court, the Supreme Court, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, and federal courts all around the country have already held that the time it takes to ask a couple questions and to ask for consent does not extend a traffic stop. Now, Floyd has never responded to many of those cases. He's never responded to Robinette, to Griffith, to Royer. His only possible response to those cases is Rodriguez, but Rodriguez doesn't silently overrule all of those cases. Rodriguez considered a dog sniff that took 7 or 8 minutes after a traffic stop was otherwise over. Rodriguez simply rejected the idea that there is some sort of reasonableness balancing test that would allow such an extension, but it did not eliminate all buffer for police officers during a traffic stop, such that one additional second converts what is otherwise a lawful stop into an illegal seizure. It has to be a measurable extension, and no one would say that a 2 or 3 second question causes any measurable delay.
Address this concern of mine, if you will. Terry requires more than a hunch. It requires a reasonable and articulable suspicion. When he called in to dispatch to request a canine unit, did he have then the basis for a reasonable and articulable suspicion?
So I have three responses.
First, only one question. You get one response and only one response.
Darn.
Pick your best one and try it.
No. Floyd's counsel has never argued that the call to request a canine unit was an extension of the stop. So yes. That issue is not presented in this case.
I'm asking you the question.
If it were presented, you should reject it. You should find that it's not an extension because Illinois v. Caballes and Rodriguez both held that police can conduct a dog sniff during a traffic stop that doesn't extend the stop. Now, those cases strongly imply that police can take 2 seconds to call for a canine unit.
I'm focusing, of course, you're dovetailing into the extension, and I'm focusing on the second issue here, the reasonable and articulable suspicion. I used to sell air fresheners, right? I owned a car wash. From my perspective, when people put those quarters in the air freshener canister, the more the merrier. Now, I have to admit that I never anticipated that my customers would put them on every vent, right? As apparently this record indicates. But nor did I think that people buying air fresheners, my customers, were doing it for illegal purposes. I mean, so why should I think that the presence of an air freshener is indicia of presence of controlled substance, I guess?
So I want to provide my third answer to your last question first, which is that you never get to the reasonable suspicion analysis until you find an extension. So you first have to find an extension before you even get to this question. Now, with respect to your prior question, do you have reasonable suspicion at the time that they called for a canine unit? Our answer is yes. You had reasonable suspicion at that point, because at that point the officer knew that there was air fresheners in every vent of the vehicle, knew the high crime area.
If there had only been two air fresheners, would that be sufficient? I mean, having air fresheners is, a good thing. So why does it get transformed into cases where it's a bad thing?
Having two air fresheners would certainly not be enough.
So an officer in another case who testified that he had reasonable suspicion because of the presence of air fresheners, and we don't know the number, that wouldn't be good enough?
That's right. That wouldn't be good enough. But in this case, the officer testified that there were air fresheners in every single vent of the vehicle. What? That's strange.
What controlled substance was located here?
Marijuana and Vicodin.
Now, marijuana has an odor when it's smoked. But what other controlled substance that we see in cases of these days has an odor?
I am not aware of all of the drugs that have odors. But
neither am I. And so I don't know that I'm missing a link. Now, I grant you with regard to marijuana and an odor. But we hear this all the time, you know. I'm just like a OWI arrest, you know, you always have glassy eyes, you know, and slurred speech, right? Not always, but those are common handles, so to speak. And in this kind of a case, it's not unusual talk about, I suppose, we see tinted glass, or I've heard about air fresheners before, you know, and here I am. I'm a big defender of air fresheners, or I used to be. So it's only good, we don't know from the record, but here, if the drug had been just Vicodin, if the drug had been cocaine, if the drug had been some kind of a meth, a variety of indicia of different drugs. What's the nexus between that and an air freshener?
What the drug ended up being is irrelevant, because the question is whether the officer had reasonable suspicion. What he knew was that there was air fresheners in every vent of the vehicle. He didn't know at that point whether it would turn out to be marijuana or whether it would turn out to be meth or some other drug. Now, he testified that air fresheners are a common technique used to mask the smell of narcotics.
I know, I saw that, narcotics. But the only one that we know about, I'm not sure this is in the record, but the only one that you're able to tell me about is marijuana.
Again, I said I don't know which drugs have smells and which drugs are effectively masked by air fresheners. That said, this court in Malone acknowledged this fact exactly, that air fresheners are a common technique to mask the smell of narcotics. So if this court were to disagree with that now, it would have to overrule Malone.
Well, I just want to know why. I mean, air fresheners are a hopefully everyday event, car washes.
It's not an everyday event to have air fresheners in every single
vent
of a vehicle.
No, absolutely. I agree. I commented that this is odd. But I'm talking about the good old generic air freshener, one or two. Should that ever give rise to reasonable suspicion?
No, we can see that point. If there was a single air freshener hanging from the rearview mirror, that would not be enough.
Yeah, and two wouldn't be enough either, you
said.
But maybe three?
Right, but we have air fresheners in every vent. We have a high crime area. We have tinted windows. And we have the fact.
How many air fresheners were there in Malone?
Seven or eight was the testimony there.
And what other cases have relied on air fresheners? And do we know the number of air fresheners in those cases?
I'm not sure I could name a bunch of cases, but Malone cites a bunch of cases. The Court of Appeals cited a bunch of cases. I can't list them for you now, but there are a lot of cases that have considered air fresheners a relevant fact.
Yes, and what I'm trying to get is at the number.
The number is not in the record.
The number's
right?
not in the so record
So you've
here.
Done as much as you can
and
for
I think
this
that,
record.
And I think the number is not the important point. The point is it was in every single vent, which is strange.
But we don't I'd know like how you many to vents. Address consent, would you please? It's an issue in the case on whether there was actually consent for this search that we've talked a lot about.
So our position is that that issue is not actually in the case. There's no question. Floyd has never argued that he did not, in fact, consent. He has never argued that consent was involuntary, and so his only argument is that by extending the stop illegally, the consent became invalid, even though it was voluntary, even though he gave it. If you think it's an issue, then I'll address it anyway.
Well, it's brief, so I'd like to hear what you have to say about it.
There's just nothing. There's no fact to indicate that his consent was involuntary. There's no threats. There's no deception. There's no false promises of leniency. There's no coercive environment. There's nothing put on the record about his particular demeanor or state of mind that would make consent impossible or involuntary.
Well, Counsel, Mr. Floyd does say, though, doesn't he, that the question was posed under circumstances that conveyed the sense that compliance was necessary. The officer was still holding his identification card. He hadn't explained the citations to him yet. And in those circumstances, he says, what choice do I have but to say yes?
Right. So that's what I was about to say. The only relevant fact is the fact that consent was requested during a traffic stop while he was otherwise detained. That is not enough to render consent involuntary. That's a direct holding from the Supreme Court in Schneckloff v. Bustamante. That's a paradigm case on voluntariness. It involved a consent request during a traffic stop, and the court said there's nothing here that's inherently coercive that would render consent automatically voluntary.
Could we just step back to the reasonable suspicion for just a moment? I understand we only need to get there if we are concerned about whether the traffic stop was extended, correct?
Right.
All right. So when we're totaling up the number of circumstances and their nature to determine whether there's reasonable suspicion, don't we have to find something that indicates that there's reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is presently taking place?
Yes, that's the test, that reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. So that's
currently, right? As the officer's standing there, he's looking at the totality of circumstances, and he says to himself, why, I think there's something amiss going on right now.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
So under these circumstances, as I was considering this, it seemed like any car driving through this area with tinted windows and air fresheners would be sufficient to show reasonable suspicion that there is something presently going on that is of a criminal nature.
Any car with air fresheners in every single vent of the vehicle, which is not going to happen very frequently.
Right.
Additionally, Floyd was driving illegally. He didn't have a license, he didn't have insurance, and his registration was suspended.
Right. So was that fact part of the reasonable suspicion algebra that was done?
By the Court of Appeals, yes. The court said that he was driving illegally in a high crime area.
So how this high crime area, what is it, 5-10 square blocks, what do we know about that?
The officer didn't testify about that, but he said that in his experience, this area was commonly associated with drug and gang activity, and that the criminal activity in this area was commonly associated with weapons.
Let's say he drives a few blocks down the road, and there's the notice. You are now exiting a high crime area. And he gets pulled over across that line. Is there, at that point, reasonable suspicion?
So if you didn't have the high crime area factor but just had the fact that he's driving illegally, has air fresheners in every vent, and has tinted windows, yes, I would think there would still be reasonable suspicion.
Okay. Now, what is it about the tinted windows and the air fresheners that suggest there's something happening right now as opposed to it happened yesterday and I just forgot to pull out the air fresheners?
Because, as this court recognized in Malone, and as the officer testified, the use of air fresheners is a common technique to mask the smell of narcotics. So the suggestion is that there are narcotics in the car that are attempting to be masked.
Right. So, let's say we give you full marks on the masking question, but that doesn't mean that there's always narcotics in the car, right? I mean, he's unless that is part of the protocol of drug dealers. You know, I'm getting ready to go deal. I'll plug in my air fresheners now, and then when I'm done, I'm off duty. I pull the air fresheners out. Isn't that just a constant thing?
Well, the reasonable suspicion test doesn't require always. It's a common sense test. So all you need is some indication of drug activity. That's what we have. So yes, in some circumstances, those factors might be innocent, but both this court and the Supreme Court have said innocent factors can combine.
We have generally considered the presence of air fresheners as being one of many factors. Have we ever considered it as in and of itself indicating present criminal activity, right? So apart from apparently Mr. Floyd has a very good poker face, others don't. So, you know, you have the situation where there's a little bit of sweating, there's a little fidgeting. That's present sense stuff going on, right? So then we say, well, look, here's the air fresheners and the tinted windows, and that all tells me that right now something's going on because he is presently nervous. But let's take that present nervousness out. We put Floyd in there, and he's got that poker face, and there's nothing there that says right now something amiss is going on.
Well, there's a statement in Malone. So Malone is the case that talks about air fresheners. When Malone starts discussing, says there were 7, 8 fresheners in the car, it then says that's enough to justify reasonable inquiry, as if alone that might be enough. Now, it's also important to remember that all that needs to be justified is the extension, if there was one. Our position is that there is no extension for two reasons, one of which I haven't gotten to yet, but all you need to justify is any extension. If there was any extension here, at most, it was 2 or 3 seconds. So you don't need much reasonable suspicion to justify taking a few extra seconds to ask two questions. That's all we're talking about here.
So you're calibrating the extension, if there was one, you're calibrating that to the quantum of reasonable suspicion.
That's right.
All right. And that's the only purpose for making the reasonable suspicion inquiry, right, is to determine whether this could be extended?
To justify the extension, right, because he consented to the search. So we're not talking about reasonable suspicion to justify a non-consensual search. All we're talking about is reasonable suspicion to justify asking for consent.
I'm just going to interrupt since this all started as a consent thing. Who has the burden of proof to show consent here?
The state.
Okay.
And the state met that burden at the trial court and at the Court of Appeals. And Floyd, before this court, hasn't raised the issue of whether he in fact consented. He hasn't raised the issue of whether consent was voluntary. And so the state didn't brief that because it didn't view that as being part of this case. The only position that Floyd raises is that the consent was invalid because the officers illegally extended the stop. Now, as I've said, there's two reasons to reject that argument. First, the time it takes to ask one or two questions is not an extension.
I'm looking at this the defendant's brief, and his number two is there was a lack of voluntary consent. Counsel's failure to present additional evidence constitutes ineffective assistance when there's no reasonable strategic reason for not bringing up the evidence and would have altered the outcome, where it would have clearly shown there's a lack of voluntary consent. And then he talks about voluntary consent on pages 30 to 34.
So argument two is about ineffective assistance of counsel.
That. Revolving around consent.
Sure. But he never has incorporated that evidence to actually argue that it shows that his consent was involuntary. But as I said earlier, even if he had, there's no reason to conclude that the consent was involuntary here. The only fact you have favoring involuntariness is the mere fact of the stop itself.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court has held that that's not enough.
Right, and the burden was on you. That's all I wanted to raise.
Yes, right.
You were asking a series of questions, Justice Kelly. I'm sorry to have interrupted, but I want that to be clear on this record.
No worries at all. On the question of consent, I'm curious about what he consented to. Right? So the officer asks him, do you have anything, any weapons, anything that could hurt? He says no. Can I attach it down anyway? He says yes. All right, so how extensive of a pat-down may an officer conduct under those circumstances?
So I understand that there is a rule that the scope of the search has to be limited to the request for the search. That said, Floyd has never raised as an argument that there was anything constitutionally problematic with the scope of the search, so that issue is not presented by this case. Now, there are also rules that even if the officer had to limit his search to weapons, if he feels drugs and it's sort of obvious in plain view that it's drugs, you can then take the drugs, basically.
Indeed.
But
was
we haven't
he expecting to find a weapon where he found the drugs?
No, probably not. But because that issue is not in this, hasn't been raised by Floyd, the state hasn't briefed it. If the court thinks that's a dispositive issue in this case, the state would appreciate the opportunity to brief it before the court decided the case on that ground.
Counsel, your answer to a whole series of questions here is the defendant didn't raise it, therefore you didn't brief it. What is raised here? I mean, I keep seeing consent all over the place on page 14 of your brief. A, Ruffalo didn't extend the stop, meaning Floyd's voluntary consent was valid. And you assume it's voluntary because he doesn't raise it, but he does raise it. I mean, what are the issues that you think were raised that you have to address?
Right. So consent can be involuntary. That's one way that consent can be found not to be sufficient.
Or, but you don't think it's raised.
Or consent can be invalid. The rule is consent is invalidated by an illegal seizure. So his argument is that the officer extended the stop, converting it into an illegal seizure, and therefore consent was invalidated. So you have to decide, was there an extension? We have two arguments for why there wasn't an extension.
Okay, so you don't think aside from extension we have a consent issue?
Right. There's no issue with the consent other than this extension argument.
Well, there's an ineffective assistance of counsel argument,
right,
where it somewhat comes in that form as a, you should have introduced this other witness because that witness would have had a competing version of whether consent was given. But that's part of an ineffective assistance of counsel argument, not a,
right,
was this stop,
was the
consent, was this
voluntary?
Consent involuntary because it occurred after an extension of a stop.
Right. And the ineffective assistance of counsel claim, the important point is it's entirely meritless. His only claim is that his trial counsel should have introduced the testimony of the backup officer to show that the officer didn't actually ask for consent but simply told Floyd that he was going to consent. But we know exactly how the backup officer would have testified because he did testify at the post-conviction hearing, and his testimony was consistent with the officer who did the search. He said consistently, he asked 4 or 5 times. And so there's no reasonable probability of a different outcome had that testimony been introduced.
And just to be clear, I just pulled the court order in this case, and it specifically states that you may not raise or argue issues that were not set forth in the petition for review. So if you were going to address the consent issue, that would be different than what was addressed in the petition for review and contrary to the court order.
Yes, that's right. So as we've said, our first argument for why there is no extension is because the time it takes to ask two questions does not extend a stop. That's what this court held in Griffith, so we're asking you simply to reaffirm that holding. If you understand Rodriguez in the strictest way possible, such that one additional second is too much, you should still find that there's no extension because the questions here were about weapons only and were justified by protecting the officer's safety. Now, Rodriguez held that safety precautions causing only minor delays are part of the mission of a traffic stop and therefore do not extend it. That's what justified the rule from MIMS that officers can always ask a driver to step out of their vehicle. Here, the officer asked Floyd to step out of his vehicle because he needed to explain the citations to Floyd and because he knew that Floyd could not lawfully drive away. Given that it was going to be a face-to-face encounter, the officer reasonably asked, "Do you have anything on your person that can hurt me, and do you mind if I check?" Those questions took only a few seconds and were justified by protecting the officer from potential harm. So I'll just recap. There's two reasons why there's no extension. The time it takes to ask two questions does not extend a stop. But even if you think adding a few seconds is an extension, the questions here were about safety, and Rodriguez held that safety precautions do not extend the stop. So
does your whole case rely on the fact that the extension was legal, or does it matter, really? Suppose the extension was not valid, and now he sees the the air fresheners, and he puts two and puts three and nothing together and finds out that there's drug activity, or his suspicion of drug. No good?
So we've made three arguments for why the extension was lawful. The first two are that there was no extension.
You don't have to repeat those. Suppose
so the first two that there was no extension. So assume, if you assume that the extension was unlawful, then the general rule is that consent is automatically invalidated. Now, we've argued in the alternative that a non-consensual pat-down was also justified, but that's a much closer question. And so we
have. That's your argument anyway.
Right.
And the what happened in this pat-down was that he was patted down between his legs and a packet of drugs fell out. Isn't
that's
that
right.
What happened?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that usually where a weapon is found?
No. But again,
was the search.
There's no argument.
Pat-down for weapons. Isn't that the usual grounds for a search for the safety of the officer?
Right. And he patted down in all of the areas you would normally pat down. During the pat down, he felt what was most obviously drugs, and he retrieved the drugs. Now, there's no argument in this case that the scope of the search or anything about the search was unconstitutional. If you think that's a dispositive issue, we'd appreciate the opportunity to brief that, because we haven't briefed it up until this point.
I looked at the petition for review because I'm a stickler for, did you? Was the issue in the petition for review. And the issue in the petition for review is on the counsel's ineffectiveness, and that was a valid consent issue. Okay. Thank you.
So to recap, once again, there are two arguments that there was no extension. The time it takes to ask questions is not an extension, and questions that are about safety, about weapons, are not an extension. Even if there was an extension, our position is that the extension, the minor few seconds, was justified by reasonable suspicion, and therefore it was a lawful extension. If you accept any one of those three arguments, then you must uphold the consensual search in this case, because there's no other reason to invalidate consent. Floyd provides no other reason.
So if it's a valid extension because of reasonable suspicion, then it all turns on whether there's reasonable suspicion, articulable, objective reasonable.
Yes, but you only get to the reasonable suspicion question if you reject the first two arguments that there is no extension at all. The ineffective assistance claim we think is entirely meritless, as we've described, so we would ask this court to affirm the Court of Appeals.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Doesn't seem you briefed anything, counsel.
Well, I think in terms of the consent and the extension of the stop, that's always been argued from the motion to suppress hearing. And the reliance on that being the Court of Appeals case Lubeck, where when the scope of the stop is exceeded, the basis for the detention is no longer valid. And that's reaffirmed by Rodriguez. And when that is going on, and as the court noted in Lubeck and other courts have, when the detention is no longer valid and the officer has retained the driver's identification and documents, the requests made at that point are conveyed in a manner that compliance is required. And that's always been the argument. I also, in regard to there's been some discussion about we don't have to get to reasonable suspicion. The Court of Appeals decision in this case was published, and it determined that there was reasonable suspicion based on these factors. And so it absolutely is an issue in this case of whether the circumstances were objectively reasonable to form a suspicion that Mr. Floyd was involved in criminal activity. The state says that we have not responded to cases such as Robinette or Griffith. And Robinette was a very limited opinion. It eschewed the main point of that opinion is that there are no per se rules, and that it wasn't required for the officer to tell the driver, you are free to go, before the consent is valid, and that is not our position here. If you look at Robinette, the officer provided the identification back to the driver in that case when he made the request. That's different than our case because, unlike this case, that does not convey, the request is not made in a manner that conveys compliance as required. Deputy Ruffalo made clear that he was withholding the identification citations to make this request. In addition, the state talks about Griffith. The mission in Griffith was not resolved when the question in that case, which was just who is in the back seat, that's far different than what's going on in this case. During the entire stop, the deputy had resolved the mission, which is what were the traffic violations. And instead, as he said he could have done, which was to return those citations and his identification to Mr. Floyd in the car, he did something else. He had Mr. Floyd exit the car. He asked Mr. Floyd, do you have anything that can hurt me? And then he involved this intrusive frisk. I think the court is correct. If there's concerns about the scope of the frisk, the presence of weapons where the officer found it, where the officer found these items, is not something where an officer might believe that there was weapons. And I think it just illustrates how the officer, what occurred here was unreasonable.
When did he call for the canine?
I'm sorry?
When did he call for the dog?
He called for the canine. It's my reading of the record is that he called for the canine as soon as he left Mr. Floyd's, that initial interaction with Mr. Floyd.
So he had a suspicion there were drugs. Why would he call for the dogs anyway, not for the registration or the driver's license?
The record here illustrates that he jumped to this conclusion. He was set on the conclusion that there is drugs. He testified at the hearing, I was not going to let Mr. Floyd leave until I did this search. He's very clear about what's going on here. And so he absolutely asked for a canine unit as soon as he walked away from the car.
Counsel, the extent of the search was not part of the petition for review, correct?
No, I agree that it is not.
Okay.
And that I think it's, if the court would like to have additional briefing on that issue, I think it would be appropriate to do so. I think it just incorporates, though, the points that we have raised, which is what occurred here was not the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. And what occurred here was unreasonable. The mission of the stop was to resolve the traffic violations that was done. And the deputy intentionally withheld the citations and Mr. Floyd's identification to do the search that he said he was going to do. And he had Mr. Floyd exit the car, and he obviously did not agree with Mr. Floyd when he said, there's nothing on me that can hurt you. The stop is not, it's being prolonged. And, the state says, oh, it's just a few seconds. Well, there's two problems with that. First, Rodriguez says that the state does not get, the government does not get bonus time to continue a duration, to continue a detention if they've diligently, done the steps of the stop. The deputy here, he's done everything. He's ready to end the stop. And so the government doesn't get bonus time to do something what happened here. And I think the record is clear that the officer was manipulating the end of the stop. He did not have to have Mr. Floyd exit the car. And it's like the safety justification is based on him doing this unnecessary step, which is exiting the car. Oh, well, once he's exited the car, now it's face to face. And now I have to do this. Now I have to make this request. That's all part of the mission. The mission was to resolve the traffic violations, and that was over. And it was clearly prolonged to do not just questions, but a request to have Mr. Floyd give up a core fundamental right, which is to be secure in his person. I notice my time is up.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you both for fine arguments. Just then we think we know all about these questions that you present. We find that there are new issues. So the briefs were very helpful, and the arguments were also very helpful. We're going to take a brief recess so that some students can leave and others can come in. And we will be back to do our second case of the morning as soon as the courtroom has settled down a bit. So thank you all, and we are adjourned.